This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn Mark and Roshan Kanisan. It is 6 o'clock in the morning, Thursday the 3rd of December. And in the interest of full disclosure, I think a lot of us here in the studio, we nearly missed our cue to turn the mics on because we were all busy looking at our Spotify Wrapped playlists.
I don't know what you're talking about, Lynn. I'm going to stand by plausible deniability. Also, you completely... usurped my line. I was going to ask you, Lynn, do you know what time of year it is? And you would say something like Christmas, and I'd be like, no, it's Spotify Wrapped year time, that time of the year.
Snooze, you lose, man.
We had a little bit of, you know, there could have been a bit of banter, a bit of funniness to it, but you ruined it all.
There could still be banter. We don't get too stuck in the past. So tell me what's on your playlist.
Oh, right. For the, let's open up my
very quickly,
app.
The first couple.
The first couple. Oh, yeah. The top song of the year for me was Blinding Lights from, what's his face? The Weeknd. And Dua Lipa.
What's his face?
Dua Lipa's Physical. Both very retro-ish tunes that I quite liked listening to on repeat, especially when I was working from home. And for I think a fourth year running, Ariana Grande's Touch It is in my top five list.
Yeah, mine is all just basically Hamilton and a generous helping of other musicals because, you know, that's how I roll. So we'll probably talk a bit more about this sometime later today.
But... yeah, but, you know, let us know what your Spotify playlist is. You know, like send it to, we've got our number 018-789-8899. Send us screenshots. We would love to see what you listen to.
All right. But in the meantime, we've got a lot of things lined up for you in this next hour. So later on at about 6:45, as usual, we're looking at the front pages of our papers and portals. And then about 6:30, we're taking a trip around the world. So what are we going to be looking at then, Roshan?
Well, it's not a day in this COVID-19 life and we don't talk about the vaccines or something related to that. So we're going to be talking about the vaccine and how it's been registered in the UK for use, I think. We'll get more details for you then at about 6:30 after the news bulletin. But closer to where we are in time right now, in about 10 minutes, we're going to be talking about virtual assistants and whether that's something you'd like to help you in your daily task, or is it too Black Mirror for you?
I mean, realistically, who's going to say no to any kind of assistant at this point? But you know what? We'll talk about that more later. Up next, well, if you want to weigh in on our conversations, you can WhatsApp us 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Up next, though, we're talking about friendships and whether this pandemic has maybe put some of them under strain. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was Crossroads by Eric Clapton, and you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn and Roshan. Now, have you found yourselves at a bit of a crossroads with some of your friendships over this past year? Because I'm looking at this article from BuzzFeed News talking about how some friendships have been tested during the pandemic. I mean, some go as far as one person thinking the other is selfish because they don't want to wear a mask, for example, to others like just the basic fact of physical distancing, changing the way you interact with the people around you and that dynamic, therefore, changing by necessity. So I wonder whether, you know, your friendships have changed and during this pandemic and how. Roshan, what do you think about this?
I think it certainly put a bit of strain on many friendships, right? And not intentionally. It's just because... distance, right? Mm-hmm. When you've got distance and you've got movement restrictions and things like that, it becomes a bit more difficult to connect. And yes, you've got technology and all that wonderful stuff, but it becomes a bit more, there's less spontaneity to all of it, right? I mean, especially when you talk about work, the work environment, there's no more water cooler chats, right? So the camaraderie in the office itself also is split. So for us at BFM, we're split into two teams, right? So team A, team B. And so team B has their own camaraderie and team A has their own camaraderie, but there's a little like river in the middle that we don't really connect.
We exist in parallel universes,
yes, this
basically.
This is basically, and I liked using this reference, if Thanos had been a bit distracted when he snapped his fingers and instead split the world into two parallel universes where one home working environment, one office working environment. But it is... you've got that test, but you've also got the health concern test. I think that's more American-centric, really, because they are more divided about what to do about COVID-19 and things like that. And then we can go into a whole leadership spiral around that, but let's not go there. Here, I think people are generally following the SOPs, and it's good to see. And I know people in my circles are generally very cautious individuals, right? So that's why we don't meet up. So before, every weekend, we would meet up for tea in my place, or we would play FIFA, or we those sort of things. And yes, I still play Xbox as a 30-something-year-old. Xbox is for everyone, even if you're 50.
I think, well, in my case, at least in my immediate circle, actually, we did see some friction early on in the kind of movement control orders, because we had friends and family who were returning from overseas. And there was a lot of concern over, especially like, so some of my family live in the same apartment building, not in the same flat, but in the same apartment building. And there was, you know, the fact that, so-and-so's daughter is coming back and staying from the UK, she's going to be quarantining in the house at the time, because they hadn't opened the quarantine centres yet, for 2 weeks. It became almost a family argument over whether or not, you know, you should, how well you are taking care of your own quarantine measures, because everybody was just afraid at its heart, right?
Partisanship, no matter where you go. I miss the days where it was just about sports and football teams. Arsenal is better than Liverpool or something like that. And I didn't mean that being today. Liverpool is obviously better than Arsenal in today's realm of football. I'm talking about 10, 15 years ago.
And to clarify, you're talking as an Arsenal fan, so you know.
Oh yeah, of course, biased a lot. Significantly there. But again, that aside, there is a certain level of partisanship. But, you know, Lynn, I've also found myself in those situations. And I decided to pull myself out of the equation, right? Because I can't control how other people are going to behave. And that can be very difficult for some individuals, right? I'll just go to my room, or I'll go somewhere else, or I won't join that social event. And these are not painful things, but they are...
They're a sad necessity.
There is a sad necessity,
yeah,
right?
Life now.
And so there's also the FOMO and things like that. So things have definitely changed. But they've also, I can't speak for everyone, obviously. But I've positively adapted to a kind of new routine where everyone kind of knows to stay safe, and then we meet up when we can. I'm doing hopefully regular Zoom calls with my siblings who live in other countries. So there are new routines that are being put in place to replace the spontaneity that used to be the norm, right? And that's what we've got to do.
Yeah, I tend to agree, because yes, on the one hand, it's sad that certain friendships have kind of unfortunately fallen a bit by the wayside, because you're not able to meet up. And maybe, you know how different friends, you have different dynamics with different people. Some people, I find the dynamic works best when we are in the same, physically in the same space. And when we're not, and when we're communicating by text, it becomes quite difficult. Whereas others, you know, you can just keep the conversation going, you know, for hours. And those people I find myself spending more time with, especially when we're all kind of collectively on a Zoom call or all playing a game on the same website together in our respective places. Those friendships have gotten stronger as a result of the pandemic, because there's nothing to distract anyone a lot of the time, right? Because a lot of people are still working from home. Most of us don't really go out as much as we used to. So we have more time to fill, and we reach out to the people around us to avoid, you know, feelings of loneliness and things like that, and isolation. I have found myself closer to certain people as a result of this year. And hopefully, you know, once our lives return to some semblance of normalcy, that will still continue.
Yeah. And
conversely,
you know,
I've forgotten some people even exist.
Fantastic. That's really positive to hear, Lynn. But, you know, we would love to hear what you have to say, right? Because end of the day, part of this process, this is just what we think, but there are so many different ways I've seen individuals cope and adapt to what's going on. And as usual, the number is 018-789-8899, right? That's where you want to WhatsApp us. You can tweet us at BFM Radio. You can, you know, drop letters. Don't come to the office. Don't do that. You know,
snail mail.
Get your voice heard, because we do love conversing with you and hearing different points of view.
I actually, when was the last time you received a physical letter, Roshan?
Oh, from Bursa every month.
That doesn't count. That's official mail. Okay, well, let us know what you think. As Roshan said, the numbers are 018-789-8899 or on Twitter at BFM Radio. We're about to head into some messages, and up next, looking at the subject of virtual assistants. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was Smooth Sailing by Leon Bridges, and you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn and Roshan. And we're looking at this story out of The New Yorker this morning, and it's asking the question in the headline, you know, what if you could outsource your to-do list? Because it's the end of the year, you know, you're heading, you've got less than 30 days until the end of 2020. And for a lot of people, that means, yes, you're going to be buying presents if you celebrate Christmas. You probably have expenses to file with your company. You probably have a variety of administrative tasks that maybe you've been procrastinating on since the middle of the year, and it's all kind of coming to bear at the same time. So at this point, you know, would you take on a virtual assistant? Because the author of this article, Nathan Heller, talks about how he was in conversation with a colleague of his, and he didn't have an assistant because, as he puts, he couldn't afford one. And then suddenly, you know, as he and this other person are trying to find a time to meet up, this person says, oh, Julianne can help us find the time. And lo and behold, there's suddenly someone CC'd in the email thread. And he's like, oh, who's this lurker? This person has what they call a virtual assistant. So someone who can help with email management, other kind of things on your to-do list from somewhere else.
Yeah, so when we think about the word virtual assistant, I think I want to just break this down a little bit. I think there are two ways we can go about this, right? One is a bit more of a traditional element to it, where I read Tim Ferriss's The 4-Hour Work Week about 10 years ago or something like that, and he talked about outsourcing to an assistant outside the country, right? So that's a virtual assistant because mm-hmm. this is a human being in another part of the world who's helping you with your day-to-day tasks and keeping you sane. Then you've also got the digital virtual assistant, right? Your Alexas, your Siris, Siri is probably the least smart of the smart assistants. So Alexa or Google, right? I'm not sure what the Google smart name is. They are all trying to make it easier for you to put your task aside. But the virtual assistant, the human behind the digital interface here, that's just an assistant, but a human assistant, mm-hmm. but slightly a follow-up because they're using part of the capacity, right? They've probably got a few clients that they're servicing. It is an interesting concept, and I would be intrigued by it. Of course, it always depends on the price point, right? But I also have a sense of control. I have control issues, let's just put it that way. And I have my virtual assistant right in front of me. It's my black Moleskine notebook, which everything is on. It's my second brain, or I'm trying to build it into my second brain. And I put everything there, and it's helped keeping me sane as it is. But I can see a point where I might want to transition over. But again, would I be able to trust that individual to be able to manage all these things? Because when I take a look at it, these are base. These tasks may form the base of my day-to-day or even my life. So do I want to trust someone else to how much responsibility yeah. or, you know, how much does this person care about how well my life goes?
Yeah, but I guess this is, you know, noting things down is one thing because that helps you keep track of all the various thoughts and appointments and, you know, calendar things that you have to keep, you know, on the surface of your brain. But what about when a task requires your physical presence or when your task requires you to order something, you know, or to buy something? That's when I guess these assistants actually do come in useful, particularly because, you know, we're not all of us are people who have secretaries who can say, you know, hey, can you go and like get me that thing from that shop because my daughter's birthday is tonight, that kind of thing. Most of us can't do that. I've thought about the idea of using kind of outsourcing tasks to people like kind of like GoGet or even actually Grab Delivery now.
There we go. I was just going to say, I don't mind outsourcing certain tasks, right? But I wouldn't give my entire to-do list to someone to manage, right? Because this is maybe just a personal issue I need to deal with and find someone to talk to about. But it comes down to the control issue. And it comes down to whether this person will execute it to the level I want it executed. So if it's basic tasks like getting groceries and stuff like that, all that I don't mind outsourcing to other people or other things or other services because, I mean, if I want ice cream, there is a specific ice cream I know I want, right? You can't go wrong when it comes to that. Maybe you buy a wrong size or buying certain groceries. These are all very commoditized tasks that don't have much variability to it. But when it comes to, I think, generalized things, then it becomes a bit more bit more complicated because sometimes you don't know exactly what you want until you see it. Will the virtual assistant know what you want when they see it?
Mm.
Huh, that is the question.
You're obviously not a person who really cooks version because I know. I've heard a lot about grocery struggles, outsourcing grocery struggles to husbands or partners who don't who are not involved in the kitchen.
Exactly, that's what I'm pointing out. Like, you have to give them specific instructions as someone, as a son who's done that plenty of that. Just give specific instructions and they will never go wrong again. So I'm talking about someone...
So give specific instructions to your virtual assistant.
But see, that's where the struggle comes in. Giving that specific instruction can be tough. If you want vegetables, how are you going to describe, I want a vegetable that looks like this but doesn't feel like this and should have this kind of feel to it? Because, you know, when people go, if you've cooked enough, you know what kind of vegetable you want when you go to the market. You can see there's a certain soft skill around it. And that's not something that you can just necessarily pick up if you don't spend enough time in the kitchen.
Yeah, it's true. I think my grandmother has a particular knack of finding sweet papayas, and I don't know how she does it.
Conspiracy theories, Lid. Conspiracy theories.
She describes it as, oh, it's, you know, the ones with the pocked skin because the birds have been at it. And I'm like, I don't know. I'm just gonna figure it out. So I guess that goes to show it can be difficult to communicate, yes, certain concepts to someone else outside of yourself. But then I guess it's a matter of choosing what kind of tasks you want your virtual assistant to get.
I think that's what it really is, right? I think once you kind of have a second brain and kind of put things out, you realize then what you can outsource because it's not worth your time and what's worth your time. And I think that's very, very important. And I know it sounds a bit demeaning, but that's how the workforce operates, right? People go up the so-called value chain and the other tasks go to other people who pay a certain amount of money. But, you know, Lynn and I could just be overthinking the situation. So let us know what you think.
Yes, you WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Tell us, would you get a virtual assistant to help you with your daily tasks? Let us know. But right now, we are about to head into the 6:30 news bulletin. And here to take you there is Blondie with The Tide is High, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was You Are the Best Thing by Ray LaMontagne, and you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn, Mark and Roshan Carlison. It's 6:40 in the morning, Thursday the 3rd of December, and we are bringing you some international news right about now. Of course, first up is the fact that the UK has become the first country in the world to approve a coronavirus vaccine. So this is the Pfizer-BioNTech vaccine, and the medicines regulator, the MHRA, says that it is safe to be rolled out, I think, as soon as next week, some reports are saying.
Yeah, the first doses are already on the way to the UK with 800,000 due in the coming days, according to Pfizer. So this will be the health secretary. Sorry, that's the word I was looking for. Said the NHS will contact people about the jabs, and elderly people in care homes and care home staff have been placed at the top of the priority list, followed by over 80s and healthcare staff. So again, we're seeing that prioritization of who gets the vaccine first. And the UK seems to be that test bed right now. I think a lot of countries are going to be looking to the UK and seeing how they execute and how they implement this and how it plays out.
Yeah, I think the UK has already placed orders, I believe, for 40 million doses of the jab. So considering the Pfizer-BioNTech jab requires two doses, that means it's enough to vaccinate about 20 million people. So this will be the first wave of vaccines that we will possibly see. But I'm sure there are going to be a lot of people who are going to also be looking at the UK to see, you know, are there going to be side effects that perhaps weren't caught in the safety testing process? Because we have to remember that all of these vaccines were put together in a much shorter time than usually is taken to bring a vaccine from concept to approval and dissemination. So I guess there are some concerns, but the important thing is that we are moving in the right direction. And ultimately, this is one step closer, perhaps, to returning to some semblance of normalcy.
Yeah, and you know, just getting that data out there, transparency over the processes, transparency over the clinical trials. These are all things that will help build confidence and things like that. But if I'm not wrong here, I think the Pfizer vaccine is the one they worked with BioNTech, which is the one that needs to be kept at negative 70 degrees Celsius. So I think the first place is going to be hospitals because they have the facilities to store the vaccine at those levels, right, as required. So I think the UK and the NHS are going to be the first batches going to be done at the hospitals themselves instead of moving them around. That said, the Prime Minister, Boris Johnson, has urged the public not to get carried away with over-optimism or falling into the naive belief that our struggle is over. That's in him in quotes. And I think that's just basically, I think, don't get over-excited over it. Right? Don't overcorrect for in this situation. But this is the fastest vaccine to go, as you mentioned, Lynn. And it's going to be, I mean, it could be technology. It could be also that's the mRNA technology that's being implemented here. So it is different. But like you said, that light at the end of the tunnel is getting bigger and bigger. So hopefully this gives a general level of optimism around the world for a life that we once had before the pandemic coming back at some point.
Yeah, so that's something that we're going to be watching very closely because now other countries are also going to be, I think, under pressure to see who next approves a vaccine for widespread use. But turning our attention now as well to Hong Kong, where activist Joshua Wong, he's urged supporters to hang on. And this is after he was sentenced to more than a year in jail for leading protests outside of police headquarters last year. So Joshua Wong's been sentenced to 13 and a half months on charges of organizing an unauthorized assembly in June of 2019 and inciting others to take part. He was also, if we remember, the leader of the 2014 Occupy protests.
Yeah, this is, I don't think anyone didn't see this coming. This was definitely, I think he was arrested just a few days ago. Was it towards the end of last week? And just yesterday, if I'm not mistaken, he was sentenced to 13 and a half months by the courts there on charges of, as you mentioned, Lynn. And this was based on his actions in 2019. So other activists that we're going to be paying attention to as well, Agnes Chow and Ivan Lam, who are both members of Wong's now disbanded political party, Demosisto, I just misread that one, also pleaded guilty over their roles in the protests. So Chow was sentenced to 10 months in jail, while Lam has been given 7 months. And after the sentencing, though, Lam did shout, "Never regret it." So I think there is still this air of resistance and fighting and keeping true to the cause.
Yeah, but one wonders how long that's going to last, right? Because in Hong Kong, we have seen, we do have the fact that Hong Kong's Legislative Council is almost now entirely made up of pro-Beijing representatives, because almost all of the opposition lawmakers, I think barring two, something like that, have resigned in protest. So one wonders what's going to lie ahead. Perhaps, you know, it could be stability now that Beijing has exerted more control over the city-state. I mean, it's not great for democracy, but it might be good for the future of the financial for Hong Kong as a financial hub.
Yeah, and don't forget, billionaire media mogul Jimmy Lai is also facing some jail time there because he's been seen as an advocate. He's a high profile advocate for the democracy movement there, or the pro democracy movement as it is called. So yeah, that's just the situation that's happening there in Hong Kong at this present point.
And we're going to be turning our attention to our very own home situations in just a couple of minutes. So be sure to stay tuned. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was Good Day Sunshine by The Beatles. And you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn and Roshan. Now, we are looking at the front pages of our newspapers and portals this morning to see what's been happening overnight. You have the Star in front of you, Roshan. What's on the front page there?
Shedding light on iSina. I think a press release was released yesterday, and on the details of who can apply for the iSina program. And actually, the Malaysian Reserve has quite a nice breakdown here. There are two categories essentially for eligibility. Category one, members who are working in the formal sector. That's EPF members who are working in the formal sector, self-employed, gig workers. There is also housewives, members who have lost their jobs or were given unpaid leave, members without contribution for two consecutive months or more, including members who have not contributed for a long time, and members who are facing basic salary cuts of 30% or more from March 1st of this year. For this category, no supporting documents are needed because all this is based on EPF's data, right? So they see the contributions there. They can base their analysis on that. Members can apply on iSina.kewsp.gov.my from December 21st, and disbursements start in the middle of January. Category 2. Members who are still working and face an overall earnings cut of 30% and more, including salary, allowance, overtime, and pay after March 1st this year. for this, supporting documents are required, whether it's payslips, before and after the earnings deduction, as well as notice of unpaid leave or notice of termination of allowances and other overtime claims. Basically, for this category, EPF needs to see proof of this change in your income levels. Members can also apply at the same website, icna.kwsp.gov.my, but from January 11th onwards, disbursement will be made a month after approval. So they've come up with a very clear guideline, I think, here. And I mean, we've talked a lot about the whether they should or should not and the situation around it. But
and the impact on the EPF
and the impact on the EPF.
As the largest institutional investor.
It's definitely as one of the largest institutional investors, how it impacts the markets, things like that. But right now, for those who need it, for those who've been affected, now you know whether you will qualify for it and mm-hmm. how you go about applying for that.
Yeah, so that's also the front page of the New Straits Times this morning. Theirs is just one word, relief. So they say a ray of light for 8 million people who can now withdraw from their EPF account once. I'm very tempted to go through all of the papers and see how many references have been made to rays of light and puns on the ICNR name. But other than that, in the NST, of course, they've got a tally of the new COVID-19 cases that have been recorded. So that is 851 yesterday. There's also an article on page 4, which I think is good to just reiterate. The headline here is My Sejahtera Info Protected. And this is from coming from Dato' Ismail Sabri Yaakob, the senior minister who's been one of the major spokespersons for the government on the COVID-19 pandemic. So he is saying that the My Sejahtera mobile app is fully owned by the Health Ministry. It's supervised by the National Cybersecurity Agency as well as the National Security Council. So he's trying to allay some fears over what's going to be done with the data that's been collected through prolonged use of the My Sejahtera app, which is something that I have heard friends of mine and family, you know, expressed concern about. But at the same time, most of them also do kind of embrace the fact that in the interest of safety and COVID-19 tracing, you still have to do it. But that doesn't mean they've been fully sanguine about what's going to happen to their data. So maybe this will go some ways to allay those fears.
Yeah, and using My Sejahtera also keeps you informed. I think when you if we have that rich source of data, it's easier to identify zones that are more concerning, zones that are green. You know, mm-hmm. that helps keep things a little clearer. I've got an interesting story on page 3 of the Malaysian Reserve. Dr. Mahathir is ready to be a witness in a lawsuit against Dato' Sri Azmin Ali. And this is because some voters in the Gombak area have decided to take Azmin Ali to court based on the fact that basically he broke their trust, or essentially that their mandate. Yeah. They voted for him for a particular reason and he's broken that. And Tun Mahathir is offered himself up to be a witness in this because, you know, there's a bit of back and forth this week about whose idea this was all to have this majority Malay Muslim government. Tun Mahathir has said it wasn't him. Azmin Ali is pointing the finger at him. So there's a little bit of back and forth here. But what is for certain is that these Gombak voters do want to take this to court, and it'll be very interesting if Dr. Mahathir takes the stand here. I would be very curious to see what goes on the formal record in this, and actually what this eventually leads up to, if mm-hmm. anything at all.
And in the Malay Mail, there is an article out of Sabah here that's worth pointing out. So Sabah's COVID-19 spokesman, Dato' Sri Masidi Manjun, who's I believe also the local state housing minister, he's said that the conditional movement control order there is likely to be extended again. So this was supposed to end, of course, on December 6th. So this Sunday, this is because daily COVID cases there are still hovering in the triple digits with what he calls a bit of a yo-yoing trend. So that's something that we'll all be watching, I think, very closely. But right now we are about to head into the 7 o'clock news bulletin. And here to take you there is Loveful by The Cardigans, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.